Ever notice how the rules seem to change depending on the playing field? You know, like how a pebble dropped in the still lake makes ripples one way. But what if that lake was shaped like, I don't know, a giant inner tube? The curves, the boundaries, they kind of mess with what you'd expect. So in this deep dive, we're going to take a mathematical idea that's usually imagined on a perfectly flat, never-ending surface and see what happens when we warp that surface into something a bit more, well, donutty.
Exactly. We're plunging into the parabolic Anderson model, or PM. Now, that sounds very technical, I know, but at its core, it's really just a way to understand how something spreads out and is affected by random events. Think of heat diffusing through a material that also has random hot spots appearing, maybe, or even a population expanding while facing, you know, unpredictable environmental changes. Typically, we study this on infinite flat spaces, like imagine an endless checkerboard.
Right, the simplest case. But our sources, which are based on some really fascinating, very recent mathematical thinking, they throw a curveball. They take this PAM and put it on a torus. And for anyone listening who isn't familiar, a torus is just the mathematical term for, well, a donut shape. Now, you might be thinking, a donut, what's the point? And honestly, it's a valid question. While it might seem abstract, exploring this on a torus actually helps us grasp what happens in environments that are limited or maybe cyclical.
That's a good way to put it.
Think about how a substance might diffuse through, say, a closed loop system, or how a population might evolve on an island. The shape of the space.
It really matters.
It absolutely does. And the primary source for this deep dive is a detailed research paper, and it's packed with the mathematical machinery to investigate this exact scenario. So our goal today is really to unpack that complexity, to pull out the key insights and try to make them understandable. We want to answer what fundamentally shifts when the PAM lives on a torus instead of that simple flat space.
Yeah, what are the surprising differences? And maybe what do these tell us about how randomness and the geometry of space interact?
That's the core question. Okay, so let's get a clearer picture of this torus idea first. Our sources mention a D-dimensional flat torus. Now, for those of us not thinking in multiple dimensions before our morning coffee, let's maybe just focus on a 2D torus.
Good idea. Simpler to visualize.
Right. So picture a regular old rectangle. Now imagine if you walked off the right edge, poof, you instantly pop back on the left side. And if you went off the top edge, you'd reappear right on the bottom.
The wraparound effect.
Exactly. And if you did both, you'd basically be traveling on the surface of a donut. That's the basic idea of a 2D flat torus.
Precisely. And that's in stark contrast to the infinite Euclidean space, or ARD, which just stretches out forever in all directions, no wraparound properties at all. The crucial differences then between the torus and this flat space are its geometry and, importantly, its topology. The torus is compact. It has a finite size, even though you can wander endlessly, right? You never reach an edge because you just reappear on the opposite side.
Right. Finite but unbounded in a sense.
Yeah, and it also has a different kind of connectedness. You know, think about drawing loops on a basketball versus a donut. There are fundamentally different kinds of loops you can create on a donut that you can't shrink down to a point.
Okay, I think I've got the space. Now, the parabolic Anderson model, you mentioned it involves noise, representing those random influences, like unexpected bursts of heat
Or a sudden surge in a predator population. Yeah. Random kicks to the system.
On a typical flat space, this noise is often treated as white noise, right? Just completely random at every single point in space and time, like static.
Uncorrelated everywhere.
But this research introduces a twist: colored noise on the torus. What's the difference there? Is it just not white?
Ha. Well, yes. But more specifically, this colored noise is still random in time. So the randomness at one instant doesn't directly dictate the randomness at the very next instant. However, and this is key, it's correlated in space.
Correlated in space, meaning.
Meaning, if one spot on the torus experiences, say, a particularly strong positive random influence, nearby spots are also more likely to experience a positive influence at that same moment. They're kind of linked.
Oh, okay. So it's not totally independent point by point in space.
Exactly. The research paper notes that this colored noise on the torus is an analog to colored noise on ARD, our familiar flat space, but adapted for the torus geometry.
And this colored noise, it's described using a function, right? Looks a bit technical. What are the important bits for us about this function? You mentioned parameters I and R.
Right, let's break that down. The key point about ARD is that it essentially determines how smooth or conversely how rough the noise is spatially. So a larger I means the noise varies more gently across the torus, while a smaller I indicates more abrupt, unpredictable fluctuations from point to point.
Okay, R is about smoothness. What about R?
The parameter governs the overall strength or intensity of the spatial correlation we talked about, but here's something really intriguing, and it's a significant departure from typical PAM studies. This covariance function, Flex, on the torus isn't always positive.
Wait, not always positive, unlike what's usually assumed on flat spaces.
Correct, and that's a big deal. This negativity means that sometimes a positive random event in one area can actually be linked to a negative random event in another area, even if they are spatially nearby. That adds a whole new layer of complexity.
Huh. Okay, that is different. So we've got our stage, the donut-shaped torus, and our unpredictable actors, this spatially linked, sometimes negative colored noise. Mm-hmm. Now, the PAM also involves a heat equation, describing how things spread out. The research introduces the heat kernel on the torus, GTX. What does that tell us about diffusion on our donut?
So the heat kernel GTX is essentially the fundamental building block for understanding how a concentrated point of heat or whatever quantity we're modeling, like population density, will diffuse across the entire torus over a time T.
How it spreads out.
Precisely. And the paper highlights its connection to the heat kernel on flat space, usually called PTX. Because the torus wraps around on itself, you can think of the heat kernel on the torus as a kind of sum. A sum of all the copies of the flat space heat kernel. Imagine tiling an infinite plane with copies of that rectangle that makes our torus, right?
Yeah.
The heat spreading on the actual torus is like adding up the heat spreading from all the corresponding points on all those infinite tiles. It reflects the wrapped nature.
Okay, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
The paper mentions some properties in Lemma 2.1, bounds involving C subscript T and how it behaves for short versus long times. What's the main takeaway there without getting lost in the equations?
The crucial thing to grasp is how the torus's finite size influences diffusion. Those bounds involving C, they essentially show how the heat spreads out and becomes more evenly distributed over time. But in a way, that's constrained by the torus's compactness. It can't just spread out forever.
That's contained.
Exactly. For very short times, the diffusion behaves locally, pretty much as if it were on a flat space. It hasn't felt the boundaries yet. But as time goes on, the global geometry of the torus kicks in. The heat has had time to wrap around, maybe multiple times, and interact with itself. The finite size really starts to dominate the long-term behavior.
Got it. Okay, so we have the torus, the colored noise, the heat kernel for diffusion. Now we can finally tackle the parabolic Anderson model on the torus itself, equation 1.6 in the paper. Now this is where the math can look a bit intimidating, lots of symbols. Can we break down the core message of this equation, what it's actually saying?
Absolutely. Let's connect it to the bigger picture. Equation 1.6, this SPDE stochastic partial differential equation, it describes how our quantity of interest, let's call it UTX, changes over time T at position X. Mm. The term EU, that represents the diffusion we just discussed, how it naturally spreads out or smooths out on the torus, driven by the heat kernel.
Okay, the spreading part.
Then you have the term XWTX. This is where the randomness comes in. It says that the rate at which U changes at a point, TX, is also influenced by, well, by the current value of U at that exact point, multiplied by the random noise W just at that point. The constant lull just scales how strong this random influence is.
So the noise doesn't just add something, it multiplies what's already there.
Precisely. That multiplication is key. It can lead to exponential growth, if the noise is consistently positive.
And the initial condition, the paper says it can be measure valued.
Yeah, that just means we can start with distributed in various ways. It could be spread out smoothly initially, or we could start with all our stuff, all the mass, crammed into a single tiny, like a point source.
Okay, so very concentrated starting points are allowed.
Exactly. It lets us see how the model behaves, even from those extreme initial states.
And to understand the solution to this equation, the paper talks about the mild solution in integral form. Equation 1.8. What's the intuition behind that? Why not just solve the first equation directly?
Well, that first equation has that W term, the noise, which is mathematically quite rough. It's not a standard function. So solving it directly is tricky. The mild solution is essentially a way of reformulating the problem. It rewrites the original SPDE as an integral equation. Think of it like building up the solution, UTX, piece by piece. You start with what would happen if there were no noise at all. That's a term they called zero TXX. And then you add up the cumulative effects of all the random influences that have occurred up to time. But crucially, those influences are smoothed out by the heat kernel as they propagate through space and time. It makes the whole thing mathematically tractable.
Okay, so it's a way to handle the roughness of the noise. Then the paper introduces DeLange's condition, equation 1.0. It looks like a condition on the Fourier transform of the noise correlation. Why is this important?
Right. DeLange's condition, while it looks technical, is actually a crucial requirement. In simple terms, it puts a limit on how rough or erratic that spatial correlation of the noise can be. If the noise is too wild, too spiky, the multiplicative term Ludge might just blow up instantly, and the PAM might not even have a well-defined mathematical solution.
Ah, so it's like a safety check on the noise.
Exactly. DeLange's condition ensures that the noise behaves sufficiently well, it's not too rough, for a solution to exist and be mathematically meaningful. And what's interesting is that this condition, as derived here, only depends on how regular the noise is spatially, that parameter we talked about, and the dimension of the space, D. It doesn't depend on the overall strength of the correlation.
Okay, got it. So we've laid all this groundwork. Now for the exciting part, the main findings. What did the research actually discover? Theorem 1.3 is first, saying a unique solution exists if DeLange's condition holds.
Right. And that's fundamental. If you're proposing a model, you first need to know it actually makes mathematical sense that a solution exists and there's only one possibility for a given starting point and noise.
Foundational stuff.
Absolutely. And theorem 1.3 goes further. It also provides bounds on the moments of the solution, specifically the second moment in equation 1.11 and higher moments in 1.1 and 1.13.
Moments. Like how big the solution gets on average.
Exactly. The second moment, for instance, relates to the average of the square of the solution, UUBTXXEX. It gives you a sense of the typical magnitude and the variability. And the theorem shows how these moments depend on the initial condition, through that J0 term, and also on a function het, which captures the integrated effect of the noise strength over time. It shows how both starting state and randomness drive the solution's growth.
Okay, and the paper mentions that the proofs rely heavily on understanding random paths, Brownian motion, but specifically on the torus. And this idea of a Brownian bridge, limits 2.2 and 2.3 dive into this. What's different about Brownian motion on a donut compared to a flat plane?
Well, what's fascinating here is how the torus's compactness, its finite size, fundamentally alters the long-term behavior of Brownian motion. Lemma 2.2 essentially shows that over longer time scales, a Brownian bridge on the torus, which is a random path that starts at one point, say x, and is forced to end up at another point, say y, at a specific time, t behaves very much like a freely wandering Brownian motion on the torus. It sort of forgets the endpoint's constraint if the time is long enough.
Interesting. And the other lemma?
Lemma 2.3 looks the opposite. Very heavy timescales. It highlights that for very brief durations, locally, the Brownian bridge on the torus behaves much like Brownian motion on the unfolded Euclidean space on ARD.
Like it doesn't immediately feel the curvature or the wrapping around.
Exactly. It takes time for the path to explore enough to realize it's on a compact space. These comparisons between torus Brownian motion bridge and flat space Brownian motion are absolutely crucial tools for analyzing the random integrals that pop up in that mild solution formula.
Okay, that makes sense. Then we get to what seems like a really surprising result in Theorem 1.5, a lower bound for the second moment. It says if the spatial correlation function is positive and bounded away from zero.
Meaning it's always positive and never gets too close to zero.
Right. Then the average of the square of the solution, it grows exponentially over time. That sounds really fast.
It is extremely rapid growth.
So the big aha here isn't just that the solution grows, but that the confined nature of the donut shape seems to actually accelerate that growth compared to what might happen on an endless plane. Is that right?
That's a great way to think about it. It suggests that boundaries, or in this case, the wraparound nature, can have this really powerful, maybe unexpected, amplifying impact on how these random processes evolve over time.
Wow.
And this exponential growth is a strong signature of something called intermittency.
Intermittency.
In this context, means that the solution, UEX, doesn't just grow large everywhere smoothly. Instead, it becomes extremely large, forming sharp peaks in some very localized regions and at certain times while remaining very small almost everywhere else.
Patchy and spiky.
Exactly. It's a characteristic feature of the PAM with this kind of multiplicative noise. The exponential lower bound strongly suggests that this intermittent behavior is a fundamental feature on the torus, at least when those spatial correlations are positive.
Okay, but what if the correlation isn't always positive? Theorem 1.6 seemed to tackle that. It says that even if F isn't always positive, as long as the initial data is reasonable, like a bounded function, and that parameter is greater than zero, we still get exponential growth in the second moment.
That's right, even with those potential negative correlations we discussed earlier.
How does that work? The paper links this to something called the ergodicity of Brownian motion on a compact space. Can you unpack that connection?
Yeah, this raises a really important point about the profound impact of the torus being closed, being compact. Ergodicity, in simple terms for Brownian motion on a compact space like the torus, means that over sufficiently long times, a random path, a Brownian motion trajectory, will eventually visit every single part of the space. It explores the whole torus, given enough time. It doesn't get stuck in one region or wander off to infinity like it could on our...
That covers the whole donut eventually.
Exactly. So the paper's argument suggests that because the underlying Brownian motion, which influences how the solution evolves via those integrals, is ergodic. Even if the spatial correlation F has negative regions, the process will eventually explore all these areas, experiencing both positive and negative influences from the noise. However, because the noise multiplies the existing value of the solution, that Ludecker's term, the positive influences tend to get amplified exponentially over time. They compound. The negative influences might dampen things locally, but the overall effect is dominated by this multiplicative amplification.
So the positive feedback loop wins out in the long run because the process can't escape exploring the whole space.
That's the essence of it. This leads to the overall exponential growth in the second moment, despite the possibility of negative correlations. And this is a really striking contrast to what can happen on infinite flat spaces, ARDs, especially in dimensions 3 or higher. There, Brownian motion can be transient, meaning it might wander off and never return to certain regions.
It can escape.
Right. And because of that, you might not get exponential growth, or you might see phase transitions where the behavior changes dramatically depending on the noise strength. The torus's compactness, its closed nature, prevents this transience and forces this eventual exploration, promoting the exponential blow-up.
That's a really fundamental insight, then. The very fact that the space is finite and closed drives this explosive growth.
It tells us something profound about how confinement and randomness interact in the long run. The fact that the Brownian motion inevitably explores the entire torus means that even negative correlations can't ultimately prevent this overall explosive growth pattern for the second moment.
Okay, wow. Finally, Theorem 1.7 looks at the smoothness of the solution. It proves UTX is holder continuous in both space and time. What does that tell us practically about how the solution behaves?
Holder continuity is basically a mathematical way of describing how smooth, or maybe better, how well-behaved a function is. It limits how much the function's value can change over small distances or short time intervals.
So it doesn't jump around too erratically.
Exactly. If a function is holder continuous with certain exponents, it means it doesn't change infinitely abruptly. There's a definite limit how much its value can wiggle or change over a given distance in space or a given duration in time. The exponents Xiao1 and Bob2 mentioned in Theorem 1.7 give us precise quantitative measures of this degree of smoothness for the solution, UTX, on the torus, both in its spatial variable X and its time variable T. Even though it might grow exponentially large and be intermittent, it still possesses a certain degree of regularity.
Right, it's not infinitely jagged. Okay, so bringing this towards a conclusion, the paper mentions this work as a first step towards understanding these kinds of stochastic PDEs on more general compact spaces. And it points to related research on other, maybe more exotic spaces.
Mm-hmm. Like infinite graphs, or things called Heisenberg groups.
And it notes that the mathematical techniques used here are interesting because they don't rely heavily on Fourier analysis, which is often used on spaces like the torus, but might not work well for more complicated shapes.
That's a key technical point, yeah.
So what are the broader implications here? Where does this research point for the future?
Well, interestingly, by starting with the relatively simple yet non-trivial geometry of the torus, this research really cracks open the door to studying stochastic processes on a much wider variety of curved, compact, and interconnected spaces. The fact that the methods developed aren't solely dependent on Fourier analysis, which is very powerful, but quite specific to flat or periodically repeating domains like the torus or our build, means these techniques could potentially be adapted to understand similar models on, for example, the surface of a sphere, or maybe more intricate geometric structures where Fourier methods are difficult or impossible to apply.
So it expands the mathematical toolkit.
It does, and this naturally leads to new questions. How do specific geometric properties, like the amount of curvature or the number of holes in a space, its topology, how might those features further influence the behavior of the parabolic Anderson model or other similar random equations? The paper also explicitly highlights some unanswered questions from this specific work, like what happens if R is zero, meaning the noise has less spatial structure, or if the initial conditions are much rougher, perhaps like distributions rather than functions. These point towards exciting new avenues for future research.
Okay, so let's try to pull together some of the key aha moments from this deep dive. We've really seen how taking a model like the parabolic Anderson model, usually studied on a flat, endless space, and putting it onto a compact torus, this donut shape, drastically changes its long-term behavior.
Absolutely. The geometry matters immensely.
The compactness seems to be the driver for this surprising exponential growth of the solution's moments, suggesting intermittency. And this happens even when the random influences aren't always positively linked in space, which is quite different from what can occur in infinite spaces.
Right. That ergodicity argument is key there.
It really highlights the critical role that the underlying shape, the topology and geometry of the space, plays in dictating the outcome.
Exactly. And it really underscores the idea that even seemingly abstract mathematical research like this, exploring equations on different kinds of spaces, can yield really profound insights into how randomness fundamentally interacts with the structure of the environment where a process unfolds.
Yeah, it gives us a new lens maybe to thinking about systems that are confined, whether physically in bounded domains or maybe cyclically, like in repeating patterns or loops. It makes you wonder, could similar principles apply to other real-world phenomena, things happening on closed surfaces or in systems that have some kind of cyclical nature? What new questions does this spark for you, the listener?
It feels like this is truly just the beginning, the exploration of stochastic processes, random processes, across this huge range of mathematical spaces. It holds immense potential, for uncovering even more surprising, maybe counterintuitive, and fundamental connections between the seemingly separate worlds of randomness and geometry. It's a really exciting area.